Okay, so this morning I'm going to be presenting a bit of my own personal connection with the Tonglen practice and then a bit of a history of it and just a bit of an overview of the practice itself. Okay. So as Ratnavandana said earlier to me in our room, you'll be setting the scene, so that's what I'm going to try and do. And if anyone can't hear or anything like that, just wave something. So why practice Tonglen? I think it's just a method that gives us a way of relating to difficulties or suffering. And we've got quite a habit of resisting unpleasant and grasping after pleasant. That's kind of how we're wired up almost. Well, actually it is, in the way it's the kind of, what is it, like it's like the spell of ignorance, actually. We just live under this spell of ignorance, which is us grasping after certain experience and pushing away others. And Tonglen goes against the way we usually hold our personality together. It goes against quite a lot of our defense mechanisms and our armor, or the way that we're selfing a lot of the time. And it leads to a more insightful relationship to the world, and actually a more resourceful relationship to the world. Pema Chodron says Tonglen is part of the mind training teachings, and she talks about it being like mind training. And then she says, of course, it's mind and heart training. In fact, you could call it heart training instead. And she has this lovely image. She said it's like training a closed fist to open, which is good. It's a nice physical image. And that is quite often how our heart feels. Anyway, I first came across sort of the idea of Tonglen, or the idea of the bodhicitta practice in the Mula Yoga sense, many years ago when I did a study leaders retreat at what was then, I think, Dharmavastu, actually. And I think it was Prakasha that was leading it. And we were doing this practice, meditation practice, and I'm a bit more of an action girl myself, you know. And I realized, oh, this was the meditation practice I do off the cushion, which quite a few people were talking about yesterday when they were saying, I don't know if I do Tonglen. But then they said, but I realized it's what I do generally anyway, something like that. And I began to. I didn't take it up as a practice, but I began to wonder, well, instead of me trying to fix the world, what would it be like if I just did Tonglen? And how different would that be for me as a personality? And maybe I could think about that more, you know, to sort of function more like that rather than always being, you know, well, sorting things out on a practical level. So I felt very immediately attracted to it and also confirmed in its description. And then, probably for the last, well, gosh, maybe for the last 10 years, but it might be longer than that actually, I've been co-leading and leading retreats around Satipatthana and mindfulness. And it's a very, particularly Satipatthana, it's a very open practice, which takes you towards this kind of non-judgmental awareness, open awareness. And alongside that, I've been running Brahmaviharas retreats, mostly for friends and mitras. And of course, where you go with the Brahmaviharas is equanimity. That's where you're sort of headed as well. And I began to think, oh, both practices take you in the same place, you know? So then myself and Vidyamala, who were often we were working together, started thinking about leading retreats which incorporated both, which was clunky to begin with, but it's got a little bit more, what's the word, cohesive. In fact, I mentioned it to one of my other friends who does quite a lot of meditation retreats in around the world, actually. And she said, oh, they've started doing that a bit more in the States, combining those two because of that same realization that you end up in the same place. And in a way, they're both stabilizing practices that are helping you work with pleasure and pain, with things that you move towards, things that you move away from. And yeah, you end up with this equanimity, this non-judgmental awareness. And Tonglen's a beautiful integration of that because it's riding metta on the breath, and Satipatthana's like riding awareness on the breath. Brahmaviharas is riding awareness on the heart. So it's just all very, very connected. And over the years, when I've been doing talks on the Brahmaviharas, I've been thinking a lot about what are the near enemies and far enemies of the Brahmaviharas, and why do they arise? It's like when you're trying to teach, you have to work out why you're teaching certain things almost. You have to get underneath it a bit, underneath the skin of the teachings that you're giving. And for myself, I kept thinking, well, why does that far enemy arise in that situation? Or why does that near enemy, say, of metta arise in that situation? And I thought there must be a system. There must be, and of course in the Brahmaviharas you have this sort of mandala practice where, you know, you see if you've got a weakness in this area, you develop this thing over here, and that's the strength. And, you know, you do work with a mandala like that. But at some point, doing a completely different retreat, I realized it's where the self shows up. That's where a near or a far enemy arises. This was a realization I had maybe, I mean, it sounds very simple when I say it, but I probably had that about 8 years ago. Where the self shows up, there will be a near enemy or a far enemy of one of the Brahmaviharas. And sometimes that selfing is sophisticated and slightly disguised, and that's called a near enemy. And sometimes it's very clumsy and gross and the opposite of what you want it to be, and that's the far enemy. So I've begun, over the years, I've coined this phrase, what am I adding in always to my experience? What am I adding in? Because that's where the selfing's happening. So if I help somebody and then I add in a load of thoughts about why I'm doing that, or what I'm doing, or what's happening now, sometimes that is how I'm shoring up this sense of self. And interestingly enough, another retreat has arisen out of that for me that I've been leading, which is on Papancha. So the last couple of years I've been leading retreats simply on that construction process. So that's me kind of joining these two, Satipatthana and Brahmaviharas, together. And I've created this chart which I use on my Brahmaviharas retreats. And you've got the self in the middle. On a good day, this self is quite small, like in a neurotic sort of selfing way, it's quite small. There are times when the self here is so enormous, it just squeezes all aspects of equanimity and metta out the picture, kind of thing. But I've ended up with this model where you've got the self and you've got this development of metta and the qualities that go with metta. So this experience of connection, engagement, love, empathy and awareness. And that's gradually impinging on the self, if you like, or influencing the self, or what do you say, dissolving the self. And you've also got this other perspective of equanimity, which is the wisdom side of the Brahmaviharas. So again, awareness, balance, clarity, renunciation and perspective. And again, that's modifying the self, influencing the self. And when we're under the modification of these two things, when we turn towards pain, we will experience compassion. Or when we turn towards pleasure, we will experience mudita. So that's how I've been teaching the Brahmaviharas. And the Tonglen sort of touches in on that map. The Tonglen, actually, in a way, it's a practice that contains both a wisdom quality, a very strong wisdom quality, actually, as well as that engagement quality. And it's working with the two all the time. And sometimes you're only doing the Tonglen to work with the wisdom. And sometimes you're only doing Tonglen to work with the engagement or the connection. Yeah. And sometimes we're people that need to work more with the wisdom or the perspective. And sometimes we're people that need to work more with the engagement and connection. So I've had this whole meditation thread going on in my life. And I've also had different themes of study going on. And interestingly, the themes of study have actually had the Tonglen in its heart, which I've only just sort of realized. So one of them is the Bodhicharya Avatara, and that has the Tonglen, or the exchange of self and others, in the meditation chapter, I think it is. And I lead retreats on that. And then there's this fabulous set of verses, which I've only just recently, maybe in the last couple of years, started engaging with, which is the 7-point mind training. And I'll say a little bit more about that in a minute. And then there's another set of verses which I completely fell in love with, which is called the three chief paths, or the three principal paths of Tsongkhapa. And interestingly, Sangharakshita translated this way back for, I think it was published in the Middle Way, actually, as a translation. I think he did it for the Dalai Lama when he was starting to come to the West. And in that particular set of verses, you've got the path of renunciation, bodhicitta, and wisdom. And God, when I began going into that study, I just felt that was my path. And, you know, sometimes I think of it as being like a kind of progressive, first it's renunciation, then it's bodhicitta, then it's wisdom. And sometimes I think of it as a more like a triangle. You know, if you focus on bodhicitta, then you need to practice renunciation, you need to practice wisdom. Or if you focus on renunciation, you need to practice the other two. So sometimes I think of it like that. But I know that when I first came across those verses, I began to think, gosh, this is my whole path here. So the Tonglen practice itself, well, traditionally it's taught as part of the Tibetan Lojong mind training teachings. So that is like the 7-point mind training. And it's attributed to Atisha to begin with, although he didn't systematize it particularly. And then you can track it through various different texts, like Nagarjuna's Precious Garland and the Shantideva's Bodhicharya Avatara. And then it comes out, it becomes more systematized and more described in the 7-point mind training. And in particular by, I don't know if I pronounced this right, is it Chikawa, the teacher? Actually, Dharma Dinner's got a fabulous set of talks from, I think she gave them at the LBC, on the 7-point mind training, which is all on Free Buddhist Audio. And that's on his translation and commentary on it. Chikawa. Chekawa. So the mind training teachings are found in all Tibetan schools, and they highlight seven main kind of aspects of practice, and Tonglen belongs to point two, roughly. It shows up in other bits and pieces in the mind training, but mainly it's point two. And under point two, you get described absolute bodhicitta and relative bodhicitta, and the Tonglen is a method of engaging with that. So if you like, absolute bodhicitta is the kind of wisdom quality, and relative bodhicitta is the six paramitas and our engagement with love and compassion in our lives. So in the Tonglen practice, traditionally, it's taught like, it has a sort of different flavours to it and a different process. So it's made up of two words, Tong and Len. And Tong means receiving. And that's where you're, it's the practice of breathing in the dark smoke. You're receiving the suffering. You're receiving what you're in contact with. You're breathing it in. And then ascending out of the white light, ascending out your kindness. It's like a metta practice. And traditionally, it began with considering our mothers and the kindness of a mother and allowing our hearts to open in compassion when we're in contact with that image of our mother. But Westerners have a very complicated relationship with mother. And so now it's generally taught in a more kind of broader way. And it's now that you just contemplate somebody who is suffering. And in contact with them, in contact with that, with them through your imagination or whatever, you're opening your heart to them. And then you're visualizing their suffering as black smoke, and you're inhaling it, breathing it in, and you're taking it into your heart where it becomes transformed. Well, this lovely quote from Wallace, is it Alan? I can't remember his first name. Alan Wallace, yeah. So this is where we see the wisdom aspect coming through again. He says, in an instant, both that cloud of misery and your self-centeredness mutually extinguish each other, leaving not a trace of either behind. I'll read it again. In an instant, both that cloud of misery and your self-centeredness mutually extinguish each other, leaving not a trace of either behind. So this is where you're breathing it in, and what it's meeting is, well, it's meeting your heart, but what you're doing is you're also allowing it to transform your self-centeredness. And you know that's what needs to be transformed. So it's not that you're breathing something in that's doing you damage. It's actually breathing in nourishment. So you're taking in the nourishment of working with that self-centeredness. And Sogyal Rinpoche says, visualize that this mass of black smoke dissolves into the very core of your self-grasping at your heart. There it destroys completely all traces of self-cherishing, thereby purifying all negative karma. Imagine now that your self-cherishing has been destroyed, that the heart of your enlightened mind is fully revealed. So I'm going to try, as the week goes on, to draw this out quite strongly. It's the whole area of motivation and of it transforming us just seems very, very crucial to me. So, and it's very precious to me, so I want to try and bring that out. So in that process then we breathe out this white, pure white light, sometimes said to be like moonlight. I think the full moon happened last week, so we missed the big bright moonlight that we had last week, but hopefully we'll catch a glimpse of it. Yeah. Anyway, so we get this, we send out this cool, refreshing moonlight, and we're carrying in that moonlight the joy, happiness, well, anything, clothing, friends, money, whatever the suffering of that person would require. So then we're just breathing in, transforming, breathing out. Breathing in, transforming, breathing out. And we work, you know, just with that one person that is suffering. But then we start broadening it out, and it can be broadened out to, well, particularly, say, anyone who's suffering in the same way. I mean, that's a very, again, you go from the particular to the universal. And you can do this very much for yourself as well. Like, you might have your own suffering, let's say loneliness. You might be experiencing your own loneliness, and then you can connect in with just how many people in this world feel lonely. Or you might feel trapped in whatever circumstances, and you might then connect out with universally how many people are feeling imprisoned, trapped, restricted in their lives, and breathe out into them. Breathe their suffering in, breathe out light. I mean, I personally can't do the breathing in and the breathing out all at the same time. It's just too much in terms of my imagination, but I'll be saying more about that later, yeah, as we do the practice. I find it a bit, I get breathless, sort of mentally breathless as well as physically breathless, to breathe in and think one thing and breathe out and think another. But so we'll be practicing it more as just breathing in for a while and then breathing out. And what you're trying to do though is just make sure that you're not only breathing in, or you're not only breathing out. In the Bodhicaryavatara, it talks about exchanging self and other, exchanging self with other, or for others. And he has this, Shantideva says, all the happiness that exists arises from the joy for others, and all the misery that exists arises from wishing happiness for oneself alone. What more needs to be said? I mean, that's quite a reflection. That's not a reflection I actually believe yet, but I'd like to believe it one day. And I'm really going to try on this retreat to sort of sit on the sofa and think that through a bit more for myself. And also he teaches this thing of, exchanging, the exchange of oneself for others. And I'll just say that that means very little to me. I know that I do not understand that at the moment. I had a bit of an idea. I was thinking about it earlier. And so I sort of think, I've just been thinking it through, like, okay, so I'm trying to replace my ego-centeredness or my self-referential sort of mechanism, trying to replace that. But it isn't that I'm trying to replace it with just then becoming, just functioning in a very busybody sort of way for everyone else. So it's not that either. So it's what it's trying to do is actually kind of completely rewire me so that I'm not self-referential. And I'm just not seeing things as in that polarized self-other thing. And it's more like a kind of non-dual way of approaching life. And I'm still trying to take that to a deeper level in myself, that understanding. So if I come to any new realizations, I'll let you know. So the Tonglen generally, yes, it's a practice that it just holds many aspects. It can hold a lot of ease, just riding on the breath, and quite a lot of beauty to it. It means having to be in contact with our own resources and a very strong, wide perspective, which is very nourishing. It also requires us to engage and to witness and to see, really see what's going on. It also requires us to spend our resources. This is quite interesting. It's like when you breathe out, you're actually being willing to give up or give over your resources. So not only be aware of them, but actually be willing to use them. And it asks us to see things more universally rather than just in particular. So it's taking us more into Well, more, yeah, again, more into that insightful view of the world. So in that respect, it's combining wisdom and compassion. So I've been thinking about this quality of wisdom, and engaging. How do we engage with the idea that compassion, or giving up being self-referential, really is the best thing that we could do for ourselves? And yeah, I'm just getting this sort of image of wisdom being like a deeper motivation, rather than how you see things differently. Do you see what I mean? Like, sometimes it's easy to see it as a perspective, but sometimes it's actually like a being in contact with a much richer, broader motivation for the spiritual life. Because I think engaging with Tonglen isn't comfortable, and we do generally want just a comfortable life. So, and actually, practicing mindfulness and metta can make our lives quite comfortable. I remember when I was in Glasgow, living in Glasgow, one of my friends, Kalyana Mitra, said to her, "Are you polishing the wheel, or are you trying to leave it?" And it was such a good image. And I think, you know, we can run our spiritual lives in a way that does actually make everything run fairly smoothly. And actually trying to engage with a deeper motivation where we can actually start challenging the smoothness in order to go further requires a lot more from us. And that's a strong wisdom practice. Or it requires a lot of wisdom to do that. So it's quite a courageous practice, a courageous perspective. And to do that, we also need to feel very well resourced. So another aspect of the wisdom quality is to be well resourced and to know what our resources are. And that can come through like contact with our yidams, our sadhana practice. Somebody was mentioning Amitabha. So just, you know, what does it feel like to just be in contact with Amitabha? And to breathe into Amitabha, hold him in your heart, breathe into Amitabha. And you can really feel really strongly resourced and nourished, like as if you're not doing the practice on your own. It's not you doing it, in fact. It's more like you're just facilitating a whole process that's touching in on quite another power, an other power. You can also resource yourself by just having a very big perspective, a very open, wide perspective. Maybe it's like seeing conditionality, just really strong conditionality at play in the world. Seeing all the kind of conditions that come to support us, and all the conditions that we can rely on to help us engage with the world. And also, well, just having a very open, broad, perspective. So I think this is what people call flashing bodhicitta, that kind of, you ring the bell and your mind just opens. Just keeping it open while you then begin to engage in a more detailed way with individuals. You can also resource yourself by contacting your heart wish. What is your heart wish? And that's like, again, contacting a deeper motivation for practice. So it's not for pleasure. It's for you really, really wanting to change. You really wanting to serve the good. You wanting to really contribute. People talked about that last night. And that can come out, I think, in different ways. For me, sometimes it arises as a image or a metaphor. A while ago, it was arising as of just a particular phrase from, I think it might be from the, oh, I don't know if it's the from the short puja or the dedication ceremony. It's maybe the short puja. It's the fragrance of the perfect life, sweeter than incense. And that's all that would arise. When I thought, what is my heart wish? I just have that phrase. The sweetness, the fragrance of the perfect life, sweeter than incense. And I think that what that was that sense of an ethical life and a spiritual life just being of benefit. And I could just use that as a resource. I was engaging with that already, and I could just use that as a resource. So we're just going to explore some of these things throughout the week. But what you're trying to do really is just create a platform for you to, well, resource yourself well from. So I think that's all I need to say this morning. Yeah, we're going to be focusing, as we go through the week, we're going to be focusing on different parts of the practice and, as things occur to me, or occur to Yashobodhi or Ratnavandana, we'll be touching in on different themes. And tomorrow I'm going to be talking a bit about, I was going to say absolute bodhicitta, but anyway, that's maybe a bit high and mighty. So I'll just say just that more, that sort of platform from which we're going to be stepping out from, and the resource. And then Ratnavandana in the afternoon is going to be taking us through a session on equanimity, which is the wisdom quality of the Brahmaviharas. So that's where we're headed tomorrow. Yeah, I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.